Welcome back, everybody. This is Pádraic from the Humble Coach Podcast. We're moving into episode 31, I think it is at the moment. I am joined by I think a lot of people will consider one of the best coaches on the circuit. We'll call it at the moment, James Jowsey. James, thanks for joining me.
Pleasure. Thanks for the accolade.
Nice, man. No, it's all good. Okay, so I think that some people, if they're especially in the CrossFit world anyways, they maybe if they're in the know a bit, and I know I haven't been a Man United fan myself, kind of back in the day, having a bit of awareness of who you'd be. Could you give us a bit of a spiel on who you are, and I suppose how you got into coaching and therapy in the last number of years? Just give a bit of a spiel if you could. That'd be great.
Yeah, for sure. So I played football. I was on the books of Manchester United until I was 20 years old. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, one of the statistics that didn't make it, but the whole time whilst I was in football, I always tried to look after myself nutritionally and do the extra work and master the craft, so to speak, as well as do like the strength and conditioning. So it interested me, and I kind of knew I wanted to go into personal training in the fitness industry, because I thought, oh, that's cool, I get to keep myself fit.
Nice.
And that's kind of where that was my entry in.
Nice. Not too bad. Okay. So at the moment, you kind of work along with, is it Phil primarily? Phil Mansfield, did you work alongside kind of at the moment?
Yeah, so basically, like, I got into the fitness industry in 2005, and in 2007 I met Phil Mansfield, who's now my business partner with Red Pill Training. I was sat on a seminar that he was doing, and I'd already been interested in kind of like the movement correction and everything like that through working with clients. I'd started coaching CrossFit. I'd found CrossFit myself and was doing it and was introducing it to my clients, because I loved the philosophy back in the day of people trying to be able to do functional movements as opposed to isolated movements. When I was coaching clients and seeing that they couldn't, he was giving them all the cues, and you knew what a deadlift needed to look like, you knew what a squat needed to look like, but the picture that was in front of you of that client as you were trying to tell them and manipulate them into position, like they just couldn't do it.
Went
through all kinds of the standard movement correction courses, FMS and all that kind of jazz. The NASAM, NASAM stroke pole check, movement pattern stuff. And it gave you protocols, like very much like tick box thing.
Yeah. But
the tick boxes didn't always work for me. Mm-hmm. I wasn't happy that someone was stood in front of me saying that this is how the body is and this is how it exists. Mm-hmm. And when you see this, you need to do these exercises, and it didn't give me the return. I had people doing that, so it just didn't sit right with me. So I just kept studying, and luckily ended up on a seminar with Phil, and then he started explaining principles and how the body exists. This was way back in 2007. And all of a sudden, I started applying those principles on a basic level just from the seminar. And saw a huge change in my clients. Went deep into a mentorship with him back then. Went from being a really fit coach to a really unfit coach, but a really geeky coach.
Don't we all?
And 10 years later, still, I say, a pleasure to be working alongside Phil now. Still got a lot of learning to do, it's been a great ride and continues to be a great ride.
Nice, excellent stuff. So the I've always been interested in that, I suppose I've done a lot of different courses myself over the years, and And like that, you would get certain protocols and very much tick the box kind of I suppose pieces that you can utilize with certain clients. But there definitely is more and more of a team as you become more and more experienced of a coach, especially me. Anyways, I don't know. I'm sure yourself. That it, like Phil would have talked about, it comes back to very basic, straightforward principles that you have to apply, and then you have to make more complicated as need be. Like so. It can be really challenging for younger coaches to kind of take that on board, I think, just because of the inexperience potentially. But do you have any particular thoughts on the current, be it fitness kind of sphere or not specifically necessarily the CrossFit sphere, because I know you work with a lot of other athletes and other sports and stuff as well. But do you have any particular thoughts on the quality or the lack of quality in coaching these days in the kind of fitness world? We'll call it gyms or CrossFit gyms. And any way we can improve, do you think? Is there any kind of pieces that we can definitely work on?
Are you talking about coaches on the front line, so to speak, like in gyms? Or are you talking about the people that are out there trying to educate coaches or...
Probably the people on the front line a bit more for the moment. We'll probably get into the actual educators in a little bit, yeah. But even the people on the front line, like you, I suppose a lot of with the rise in and increase in popularity in CrossFit, especially in the last number of years. I know when I got into CrossFit it was 2008, just similar to yourself. So it was really early doors back then, and there was a lot of kind of Wild West kind of interesting stuff going on. But now it's definitely a lot more, it seems a lot more organized. There's a lot more resources available. It's much more seen as a serious kind of an endeavor, and not even necessarily only CrossFit gyms, but lots of pseudo CrossFit gyms popping up, if you know what I mean, like strength and conditioning gyms with the same kind of layouts and the same kind of culture. Do you find, is there any particular areas that we can probably improve on in general? Is it just better application of principles or straying away from the just distinct protocols to utilize when analyzing clients? What do you think on that?
It's a great question, because yeah, I spend that much time in my little cave. it can be hard to know. I think just advice for any coach on that front line is just always keep looking and wanting to understand more. Mm-hmm. Don't accept that, like, don't put anybody into a label that they can't understand that you're like, this is where I was as a coach. Like I say, it's mm-hmm. I never believed that anybody was that stupid that they didn't understand what chest up meant.
Yeah.
Like, it didn't make sense to me that someone didn't understand that. Mm-hmm. When you start to look into the principles of the body as why that body gets pulled forwards, like now you can release whatever needs releasing or strengthen the area that needs strengthening, and then naturally as a byproduct that chest comes up. Mm-hmm. So I think it's wanting to understand more to be able to facilitate the change in your clients. Mm-hmm. Understanding what you want to do as well, like as a coach, is hugely important. Like who do you want to work with? Who's your demographic? Like I've been in competitive sport all my life. I soon realized that, like, when my, like, nothing has ever replaced football for me. I did CrossFit, but it never replaced the buzz mm-hmm. of football. And like I was CrossFitting back in 2006, but I went back to play like semi-professional football, which was like two games a week. So mm-hmm. it just got to a point where, like, I was like, well, if I train CrossFit, like, I can't walk for the game. So and football was more important. So like I said, that dropped down, but nothing's replaced that. So I soon realized that I wanted to work with, just dedicate myself as a coach. And again, mm-hmm. I've moved towards that competitive side. I do work with all spectrums, but having had, my dream crushed so to speak. I realized that I wanted to help athletes achieve their dreams, like have a coach that could understand, like when I look everything that I've studied now, when I start to now understand myself as an athlete and where I was back in those days, and that beauty of hindsight of like, if only I knew what I know now. But if I kind of had a coach that could have helped me back then in the football days, like as crazy as this sounds, like I don't think I had a coach in football.
Yeah.
I had trainers.
Mm-hmm.
I had people that they ran training sessions. They didn't pull you to the side and say, right, this is what you need to do. This is how you're going to develop. If you do this, this and this, it was very much like
going through the mill.
They put you through the sessions. Football might be different now. Like, like I said, only speaking way back, whatever it is now, a long time ago, 12, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
But it was very much like put the training sessions on and the cream of the crop will rise. Whereas I said to like looking back in football, I'm lucky enough to work with some football teams now. And like, I just think they should view every player should be viewed as a Gary Neville.
Yeah.
Like there's a guy who doesn't have the ability of Ryan Giggs, David Beckham, Ronaldo, but there's a guy who with application, dedication, and a clever guy that was maybe had some outside coaching influence, but just dedicated himself, and it's like, well, there's somebody that's made the best of what they've got by application. Like we should see every athlete like that there is that ability in there. They don't have to be the natural, but directed the right way, then who knows what can happen.
Absolutely, yeah. I think that's really interesting. The biggest part, I suppose, from there would be the importance of working in the direction you want to work in, and like that, you're dealing with some fairly high level kind of characters these days, both in the CrossFit world and like that, you say, with certain football teams and really, really successful previous athletes, and some even we'll call it in the CrossFit world kind of bubble athletes nearly that have had some good and some challenging times over the last number of years. And I think the importance of some either younger coach or even a more mature, as we get more and more mature as coaches, deciding really like which direction we want to go in is fairly important. And it means we can actually apply ourselves, like you just said there, in a really good way, rather than just kind of spinning our wheels a little bit and maybe not hammering in as much as we can to make really good progress with certain people. So it's a good idea. I suppose that next kind of part moves then to the likes of your own kind of coaching philosophy, or I know recently I've been looking at the Red Pill training model, and it's a nice triangle of interesting kind of elements to it. Do you have a particular coaching philosophy, do you think, yourself, or a style of teaching or anything like that? Are you more of the quiet, like that, the quiet soul, and Phil might be the shouty one, or are you into that kind of stuff at all, because you've got such dedicated athletes that you can just actually coach them on a nice steady level rather than having to motivate them massively?
I mean, I'm quite a calm coach, really. I'm not a shouter. And also, like, I'd like to think that the coach I'm trying to be is an empowering coach. So I don't, technically try and have my athletes understand what they need to do.
Yeah.
Rather than need that constant reinforcement of what is correct. I want them to be able to self-manage and self-correct, because at the end of the day, when they're on the middle of the dance floor, they need to know exactly what they're doing. So yeah, I'm not an overly vocal coach. I've witnessed a lot of coaches, and yeah, there can be, and I've received a lot of coaching as well with, yeah. with like say Olympic lifting, for example, and I've had an Olympic lifting session and I've had four different cues within 10 reps.
Yeah.
and it's like, well, what am I going to do with that? Like, yeah. because now I feel like I'm lifting worse than I was at the beginning, albeit I wasn't technically proficient at the beginning, but I now feel like you've just completely shut down my ability to move. And lost the freedom of movement. Like that whole, like Bruce Lee's a genius. Like we just be water, float. Like, and when we get people, there's lots of the red pill premise. Like what we talk about is movement being a subconscious thing. So again, like that's where my conscious cue back in the day of keeping the chest up didn't work, because how the body understood to execute that movement was a subconscious thing of it moving towards a path of least resistance. So then by me, like again, applying a strength exercise, a flexibility exercise, stability exercise, whichever one it was, that changed the neurological pathway that the body had available. So now subconsciously we've changed movement. So now the technique looks better by just changing the how that body functioned through exercise. And that's where the kind of red pill, that's where we come from, is, well, how do we affect the athlete subconsciously so that they're moving better without thinking, so that they don't need to think about doing whatever is their body, they can concentrate on the lift, concentrate on the bar path. But then is my knee doing this? Is my hip going this way? Is my shoulder externally rotating or whatever? Like they can just focus purely on the bar staying close and moving around that bar. And there's plenty like reading literature out there. A girl called Gabrielle Wolf in the States talks about internal based coaching versus external, and performing that ability on performance outcomes, and externally focused based coaching actually increases performance outcomes, whereas internal based coaching decreases performance. So internal based coaching is squeezing a muscle. Think about activating this. Think about pushing this joint this way. Whereas external is keep you've got a laser beam coming from the middle of your chest. Just keep it facing the wall in front of you at all times. Example, focusing on that. What was cool, I redid my level one at the weekend. I've been that busy over the years. I've been an idiot, let it expire. And it was really cool to see the evolution of the level one, and they actually use a lot of external based positioning now,
very much,
and manipulating people by giving them external targets, which is helping that, and that a lot of that comes from the CrossFit Kids course, because how we teach kids is, kids don't understand what external rotation and all these sexy words are.
So absolutely.
If you can coach kid, you can coach an adult, and there's no reason that we need to be we don't need to make it more complicated for adults. You don't need to use these sexy words, because most of them don't care anyway. They're just there to get fit.
Exactly.
And I think that's a big thing with coaches, trying to make themselves sound intelligent and reinforce, like almost, give themselves a pat on the back. Like, why are the people there in front of you? They're there to get fitter or better. They don't want to hear your voice. Like, get in, give the coaching cue, get out. It doesn't need to be. If someone wants to know the ins and outs, because, there's geeks out there like me that eventually want to know it, but you don't need to go into a 10-minute spiel about it.
No. I agree. I mean, the next question I was actually going to talk about was literally, you just covered it nicely there. I suppose, and like that, looking, I would be much more as I get older, and as I do a lot more reading in coaching, and a lot more, dealing with, I suppose, with so many different types of people, be it quite good athletes, maybe not necessarily kind of games athletes or Olympic athletes or whatever it is, but knowing that there is innate abilities very, very strongly available to them, but they have significant issues going on. Like they might have really, really dodgy shoulder stuff going on. They've got dodgy hip stuff going on. But when it comes back to that external coaching, I completely agree. I did the level two there recently. And I thought I was a pretty good coach. Like, I think I'm okay. And I realized I have so much further to go. yeah. And even the people that I deal with, they're like, no, well, you're a pretty good coach. And I'm like, no, you don't know what what I've just met. and the quality that is so available if you actually really, really get stuck into it. But that's where the, I think sometimes in educational or in coaching education, there definitely can be an emphasis towards potential learning styles or different learning styles rather than the actual ability of the coach to teach correctly for the person in front of them. I think that can be the biggest thing. And you just mentioned that there. So that's a really good shout on it, because I think there is probably a little bit too much nearly. I'm not too sure, I suppose, at the higher end, like you mentioned about your time previously with United, and even with different teams, that you would have not got a huge amount of one-to-one coaching. I remember distinctly working with some of the FAI, would say the Irish soccer kind of thing, as I was doing my coaches, as I was doing my kind of certs on the way up and stuff, like level one and the youth cert and this kind of stuff. And they were always hugely emphasizing towards get in, get your 20 seconds, get out, get in again, get your 20 seconds, but like leave it, let that actually work, and people can actually improve on that. And even when you mentioned about the Olympic lifting there, it's really interesting. I'm less and less putting coaching cues into any of the Olympic weightlifting that we do in our gym. It's literally a case of a small little cue, like they had actually quite external cues or external coaching kind of cues, and letting them figure the movement out, like just let them actually improve as they go along. And then just being aware that, okay, there is significant bottlenecks in this and this, and then bringing them to the attention of the person. So, yeah, there's some really, really interesting stuff there. It's good that I think we're in the same kind of boat to an extent on that.
There's nothing, there's... Yeah, I'm not doing particularly well. There's elements of, like I said, development and movement and things, and that stuff we do new. But yeah, coaching principles, they've been around longer than we've been around.
Yeah, very much, very much.
Ones, and yeah, we've just been lucky enough to be exposed to them by no means have we invented a wheel or anything.
No, absolutely not. Yeah.
So, yeah.
With the current crop of athletes, I suppose, that you have and that you're working with, you're working with some very, very strong athletes, and even some, I suppose, that have maybe not gained the success that they would have liked. They got pretty close, but they have just kind of fallen a little bit short, or maybe not met their expectations as much. Have you found any particular challenges in trying to help them get to their kind of promised land, I suppose? Or has it just been a case of, like, small little tweaks here and there, and just being patient with the process?
Yeah, small little tweaks and being patient with the process. I mean, obviously we just had the Open, which for those athletes is they're in a lucky position that the Open's not really a consideration to them.
Mm-hmm.
So to speak, like. If they don't have to worry about peaking for the Open, they can literally just kind of continue on with training, and the Open is just there.
Yeah,
like regionals is around the corner, and that's their testing ground really. So we've made tweaks, we've made progress in the areas that they need to do, but everybody else has been training too, right?
Yeah.
So. That's so true. We'll soon see if the tweaks were right. They've taken strides forward, but is it enough? Is it? Yeah, it's a competitive region. Huge, the most competitive region, bar none.
Yeah.
When you put both Europe Central and Europe North together, it's the talent field is massive.
It's pretty ridiculous these days. Yeah.
I'm lucky enough to have a guy that's going to be in the Meridian. So he's in Africa. Mm-hmm. He's from the Africa region. That's with Europe South. And the men's side, although there's a lot of big hitters there, the density of isn't as high. But on the girls' side, I mean, most of my girls are in our kind of Europe region. Mm-hmm. The girls' side, there's like it's like night and day.
Yeah, it's absolutely stacked. Like,
like I say, you got Jamie Green. It's like, who's been to the games? Jamie Green. Who actually in that region would be competitive? Jamie Green.
Yeah.
That's literally it from the girls' side. Whereas you look at the girls' side in ours, and it's here's ten athletes that we've got.
Yeah, exactly. It's crazy at the moment.
There's no other way of doing it, but it would be cool to see like. It just be the best of the best there.
Mm.
Because when the best of the best are there, we'll truly have the best athlete.
Yeah.
Because there'll be no, like even when, like I say, each point, like you got to regionals and you've got athletes that aren't really good enough to be at regionals in the other regions.
Yeah.
So, they're going to go there. They're not really going to affect any of the event scorings. They're always going to finish in that bottom half of the field, which means the top athletes can just pick up the points with no upset. Whereas, like, yeah, let's transfer that across like to the games. So you've got those people that are going who, like, what was the stats last year on people from Europe that would have actually qualified for the games? It was ridiculous, and like those people at the games, like now the guys' points are going to be lost.
Yeah.
The more the higher the caliber of athlete, like the top athletes aren't going to be winning all those events, because all of a sudden you're going to have all kinds of people that could potentially take an event win.
Yeah.
Rather than there just being that crop that knows that they're going to pick up points, it's going to shake the leaderboard up a lot more, and you'll, like I say, you'll truly see who is the best.
I think it is getting better. I mean, I think definitely watching the evolution of it, like the likes of Castro and these guys are definitely being more aware of, like, okay, well, look, there is probably a need for a little bit more. I mean, I think there is certain areas of the world still, maybe South America, maybe the likes of China and certain parts probably of Asia that can pick up a good bit more, like even the likes of the Middle East and stuff. There can definitely be a bigger kind of push over the next few years to really find out who the highest level people are. But it's going to take a bit more time, I think, to kind of filter it out like that, to spread the eventing out, so that the regions get bigger or the open gets longer or whatever it is, you know what I mean? I think there's been lots of conversation about those kind of things. So that's really interesting.
Mm-hmm. It's a huge, they've taken a huge step forward this year.
Yeah.
We can look at the, like, yeah, I've been quite critical there on the regions, but at the end of the day, the Open's been a lot less stressful for all of Europe.
Oh, yeah. A lot less stressful. Absolutely.
They're just like, one bad event and you've literally accumulated 1,000 points within from event, and now you're out of the Open. So
yeah, exactly. Like,
it's helped that a lot, which is awesome. And it will be a constant evolution, which is it's a new sport, still a young sport. So it'd be cool to see where 10 years time, what are we talking about then? Exactly, we'll always complain because we're British.
Absolutely.
Europeans, although there's something to moan about.
Absolutely.
It's cool. It's a cool ride.
I suppose on going back towards a general kind of population type of scenario. Now, people that are looking to do quite well in the Open. Now, you work with a lot of very high level athletes in that are like, look at the Open as kind of just another training day, and it's a standard enough kind of thing. Even if it's very much in their plan as normal, so to speak. It's not a big event for them. do you find any particular areas, like, other than the kind of, I suppose, the most obvious areas in CrossFit that everyday person can improve on? Is it movement quality, or is it like that, the aerobic capacity, kind of cool kids now are just blasting in, even though it should have been all there all the time? Is there certain areas that you think are the best bang for your buck when it comes to just improving your general training towards the likes of the Open, and potentially looking at something like regional? There's obviously a huge element of genetics and just basic ability and talent and experience that will get you very, very far in it. But do you find, is there particular areas, be it mobility-wise, be it like that aerobic conditioning, or is it just general strength levels that need to be improved to get towards that kind of a realm?
For me, it's double-edged sword of is aerobic capacity and movement quality. Mm-hmm. Strength obviously is important, but there's so many strong guys that just aren't efficient.
Yeah.
So then they die, and then they're not fit enough either. So then they die off.
Yeah.
Whereas the athlete who has efficient movement and has an aerobic capacity and can actually pick the bar up.
Mm.
Like, I've worked with plenty of athletes who are super light, don't have the one rep max that these big guys have, but then do better in these in the heavier wads, purely because they're more efficient and the fitter.
Everyone,
I mean, the thing with strength training is it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't hurt. It does a little bit. It's a little bit scary to get under a heavy bar and lift the max occasionally.
Yeah.
But it doesn't hurt. There's nothing worse on this planet than doing 400 meter repeats.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, everyone wants to do that.
No.
Yeah, and the big guys, I mean, I saw one of the early ones in that 18.2A, I think some guy power cleaned 170 kilos, but his burpee squat time was 9.5 minutes.
Yeah,
like,
that's not gonna work. That's just not gonna work.
So he can power clean 170, but he struggles to squat 50 kilos for 55 reps. And move his body weight.
Yeah.
Like, it is efficiency. The hierarchy of, like, CrossFit it's not far wrong.
Yeah.
That pyramid is right. Nutrition, metabolic conditioning, the ability to move your own body, then weightlifting. Exactly. They've got a lot right.
Yeah.
Plenty of strong people out there that can't get anywhere near it. So that's it for me, for sure.
Okay.
And again, cool. Those strong guys, unfortunately, the aerobic capacity things, I mean, rowing, mass driven. So these heavy guys, they'll rip a 2K out and then lie on the floor. Where the top guys, they'll do a 2K and they'll walk away.
Yeah.
And they can repeat 90% of that three times.
Yeah.
The assault bike, mass driven piece of equipment.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the heavier you are, the stronger you are. Yes, they are. It's the metabolic conditioning part of the workout, but we don't have the capacity at every event to be able to have people running around a building or swimming somewhere or cycling somewhere. So we've got these machines, but mass helps move those machines. The assault runners, you're heavy.
Yeah.
Like, I've run an assault runner. I'm a 90 kilo bloke.
Yeah.
That thing spins. When people are like, oh, my hamstring is burning up, it's like, oh, how are you running on it? Just turn your feet and it moves. But that's because I'm 90 kilos.
Yeah.
So you've...
That's true.
It helps, and like, I've witnessed like my girls that are good runners events on these assault runners, and when you see the time difference that when they actually physically go on a run, like how far in front they come and how much lead they take when they're on those assault runners. It's like they all climb off roughly within 5 seconds of each other. So it's not, there is no advantage.
No.
For being fitter there, for being a better runner, unfortunately, yeah, the heavier girls get to, or heavier athletes, I should say, get to, they get helped along by those machines.
Absolutely. I think it's very interesting these days to look at the adjustments, like I suppose, like even that kind of loop back around towards the aerobic capacity, I suppose, direction and like that. I would have always been a huge fan, and I suppose I still am, that the efficiency part was always something that resonated with me, even as a kind of younger coach, and especially once I found CrossFit, it was very much straight into my mentality as the efficiency is the key here. Like if you can move efficiently, we can build a nice bit of strength onto you, and we can definitely build a bit of aerobic capacity onto it. But if your movement quality and your basic body awareness is not very high, it's going to be way harder to kind of build those elements on top of that. Because like that, the distinction between your metabolic conditioning, then your gymnastics, and then your weightlifting, I think the importance of the metabolic conditioning and the gymnastics is vital. Like we have some people in our gym who are ninjas at burpees. You're like, this is great, fine. But you get them to try and do an overhead squat, and it turns into absolute mush. Like it's all over the shop. And you're kind of like, hang on a second. Like, I think it's just a case of patience and really addressing bit by bit of it. But there's no amount of extra burpees I'm putting you in. Like if they ask for any extra programming, I'm not putting in more burpees for them. Like they just don't need an awful lot more burpees, because they need something different. They need sled pushes. They need whatever it is, maybe to just make sure that they can actually stay going the right direction. But once they've found, I think, a certain amount of efficiency, it's very much workout dependent or event dependent. And I think that's where a lot of people get kind of wound up in the open, that like that guy with the 170 power clean, like we don't have anybody with a 170 power clean, but the strength endurance alone can definitely be underestimated a huge amount. And I think it gets a bit of a kind of bad rep here and there maybe, but it's what the good people are doing, just working the quality sure. position. Like
I mean that's the thing with aerobic capacity, like if you're like that ability to be efficient, yes, you can be fit for burpees, but like we can stick you in an overhead squat where your movement isn't efficient. And actually, if we were to do to track heart rate and everything like that, and give you a score of, well, how much did that workout kick you in the nuts?
Yeah,
like that, because you're not efficient, like that overhead squat now absolutely spanks you.
Yeah.
Because you're not efficient, so you get the intensity from a workout, but it's intensity for the wrong reason.
Yeah,
like you can't even go there. So it's the skill acquisition is affecting the ability to achieve threshold. I mean, I say it's universal across sport. Like technique is so vital. I mean, I remember reading about Georges St-Pierre back in the mixed martial, when he was at his height of mixed martial arts, and he actually got rid of strength and conditioning. He got rid of strength, like he moved away from the high intensity strength and conditioning component, and he actually just went to traditional bodybuilding, not because he believed it was better, just he just wanted to feel good from his
training.
Strength training, like he wanted to feel bigger and stronger but actually not work hard. And the only reason he switched to that was because he went, because he was the first athlete to kind of go out into the individual domains and go train with the best Thai boxers, go train with the best wrestlers, and get your ass handed to you. He was training Thai boxing, and he got schooled by some guy who was like a fat guy that was smoking in between rounds. And wasn't even out of breath, and he was losing, and it was because he wasn't technically good enough. Wasn't technically good enough, therefore not efficient in his energy output whilst he was Thai boxing.
Hmm.
Likewise, we see it in football. Paul Scholes,
yeah,
not the fastest runner in the world, not the fittest, but technically one of the best. Positional sense, yeah, intelligence, therefore made him an efficient player.
Yeah.
And made him one of the best. Ryan Giggs lost his speed the older he got, but so smart technically and so intelligent as a player.
Yeah.
Like, could use that and make an efficient performance so that he knew where to be and when and still succeeded. And that's, yeah, efficiency of movement, be it, like, yeah, in CrossFit, we're talking about efficiency of, yeah, you have to be efficient in movement. But, yeah, that ability to be efficient in output, whatever your sport is universal.
Yeah, absolutely. Even there, I on that kind of point, for me, especially when you look at more experienced athletes, even the likes of Ronaldo and stuff, or different people that over the years you can tell they've moved position, they've definitely had some good coaching, or at least an awareness of, like, hang on a second, I'm going to be able to do a bit more if I move towards this kind of position, if I graduate towards this. Like, I may not have as much speed, I mightn't have as much, I have a bit more positional sense for this kind of an area, and be it a winger or whatever it is. And I think that's a huge part, but it takes good education and it takes good coaching to become aware of that, I think. I don't know if an awful lot of people have that innately, but that said, a lot of the, if you're an athlete, I think at this stage in this kind of time era, you're definitely much more aware of the tactics and the ability for tactics to adjust your game quite regularly, and especially as you get further and further into your career. Yeah, I think that's really interesting. The red pill coaching, I suppose, for yourself, is there a particular avenue that you're going, kind of you're hoping to go with red pill coaching and training with Phil? Are you looking at doing more seminars? Are you looking at working with more athletes, or is it just it's working nicely at the moment? So we're trucking well on. Is that the case?
I mean, we've got the mentorships. We've got the mentorships and the seminars at the moment.
Nice.
We come together collectively, and yeah, my kind of the top end athletes, we kind of both work together because Phil's got his skill set his skill sets across everything.
Yeah.
But where he kind of helps my guys is the psychological mental part of the game, and then I'm kind of ticking over on the sports specific training, programming, movement stuff. He obviously comes in and helps me where I need help. So that in athlete collectively, that's where we work.
Yeah.
But yeah, the main thing is in education, and that's education of athletes, education of coaches. So the mentorship is for the coaches, and that's where we get really deep down. Which is why we've called it Red Pill, for the Matrix fans out there.
Yeah.
Do you want to take the red pill or not? It isn't for everybody. Like, when we come on our seminar, like, you can see, like, that the pyramid that we've got there that you've seen yourself, like, that's scratching the surface. But I say people separate out, and we talk about this on the seminar, that we separate the body out into individual entities. So we train, what are you doing? Oh, I'm doing flexibility training. Oh, I'm doing strength training. Oh, I'm doing psychological training. And it's like, whereas what we're talking about as well, I've got to know that when I'm doing this exercise, how many variables am I actually affecting?
Yeah.
I'm changing gravity. Therefore, I'm changing the leverage. Therefore, I'm changing the stabilization required at the hip, therefore I'm changing this, how the athlete then can do that exercise, how that affects them psychologically. Like, it's the link of everything, and that's where we go really deep down, like I say, and that's the do you want the red pill or not. And that's why I loved it so much all those years ago when I was lucky enough to be on the seminar and just go, because that's that's what didn't make sense to me, was like, oh, well, I'm training flexibility and I'm training these on their own, but it's not actually, there's no transfer. It's not, it's just it on its own. And I've, over the years, I've assessed people that can do the splits but can't do a squat.
Yeah.
So flexibility doesn't equal the ability to squat, because that's completely different neurological pattern and involves coordination and everything like that. So that's where movement has become, movement fixing and everything being a stretching, flexibility, mobility based thing over the last few years has been really frustrating and annoying to me. Because just to tar it with that one brush, because we know it's not that, because you're going to get, you've got those people in the gym that you've told them to stretch and nothing changes. That's because there's a million possibilities. And that's what we're trying to do as an intro and give people, give coaches, give athletes, the seminar is for coaches and athletes. So you can come on there as an athlete and get an assessment and an understanding of all your considerations and what your body does as a general overview, and coaches can start to appreciate how flexibility, stability, mobility, strength all exist in functional movement, basically how they coexist and how we can assess and manipulate them to help our athletes improve. So yeah, we've got that seminar for that, which is mentorships are super booked up. We're taking interviews now for 2019. So the next, we've had two full courses now. We've got another one starting in June that's full, 12 months. That's really busy. Nice. Seminars are ticking on. Got three. Got one in Cardiff next week, and then we've got one in London. And one in Germany at the back end of the year, and that's they're the seminars that we've got up for this year.
Excellent stuff.
So yeah, it's nice. Just an evolution, a progression to be able to help coaches. I say, because my time's getting soaked up by the competitive guys now, and I understand it a lot better, and Phil can articulate what I articulate a lot better what I try and articulate. Because he's taught it for 10 years now, and he's been a teacher since he was a lecturer since he was like 18 years old. So he's a great teacher, a great coach. So he explains it really well. But yeah, it's just enabling coaches to, I say, so that everyone, so we can help as many people as possible.
Very much.
I think we get to work with the elite, and yeah, just helping coaches to work with the normal people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Nice. I won't keep you an awful lot longer, James, but I'm curious of some of the I completely agree with a huge amount of your sentiments. First of all, there. I think why I've been interested in your kind of stuff and in I suppose the type of coaching that yourself and Phil would do and the type of orientation like that, really getting in deeper to the actual understanding of the movement and how, not just basic cueing and not just basic some flexibility work or whatever it is, and it definitely has been frustrating over the last number of years. That I suppose it's just like anything, certain trends kick in and it just goes on a bit of a roller coaster. But the basic principles and the need to be like when you look at CrossFit as something very new and something really interesting and kind of wild, fine, but when you do break it down, it's a very challenging sport, but it's still a sport. And it has a certain needs analysis, it has a certain requirement. The only problem you have is it's quite a moving target, so it just takes a bit of a better understanding. That's why I think it's important that there is that type of approach, that much more, and I don't say it an awful lot, but that holistic approach to the actual learning experience of the person, be it a high-level athlete who might need just a little bit of tweaking, but also then the regular Joe who or the regular coach who actually can really affect a huge amount if there's that attitude towards openness and awareness. Yeah, I think that's really, really good. Do you have any particular resources that you're a huge fan of, other than the likes of Phil? is there any particular coaches you're a big, big fan of, or books or anything like that? Are you into that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I read and constantly try and look into other people and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But at the moment, like I say, when it comes back to the principles, you can always kind of out when you put their thought processes into principles, then you can actually see that there's big holes and they're not, like I say, it's just coming down to Phil, we did a podcast on it for CrossFit 3D, and Phil articulated this a lot better than me. It's like, are you talking about the principles or your principles?
Mm.
and that's, they're two different things, and that's in the fitness industry what we kind of come across is you've got people who are actually just imposing their principles on how we should do things,
mm-hmm.
rather than the principles. So it's like, oh yeah, well we could, like those people, oh yeah, we can fix everything with a foam roller, hockey ball and a band, or mm-hmm. we can fix everybody with some strength training because everyone's just weak, so they all just need to carry stuff and
yeah.
lift stuff and that'll fix everything. So yeah, that at the moment though, there isn't. I'm always reading. But yeah, there's nothing that jumps out. We read studies
mm-hmm.
more than anything. We go into the studies, and but even then, the mind that we're using, we don't accept blind science.
Yeah.
Because unless it's 100%, then it's actually just we all know we can prove what you want to prove.
Still up in the air, yeah, exactly.
So I mean, well, we've got a couple of S&C coaches from that work in professional sport on our mentorship, and mm-hmm. they're talking about they're in football, the glute, what do you call it now, the Nordic hamstring curl.
Oh yeah,
it's massive, and that's what fixes all hamstrings. And
yeah.
the actual stats in the studies are only 60%.
Yeah.
But people come away and they read these studies and they go, oh, well, so we need to do Nordic hamstring curls. It's like, well, okay, 60% of people need to do Nordic hamstring curls, not 100% of people.
Yeah.
And I've had to go in and work with a couple of players who had repeated hamstring tears, no matter how many Nordic hamstring curls they were doing that yeah. were supposed to fix their repetitive hamstring strains. And that's the thing, is when you can apply the principles to that, you can take apart the study and go, well, if I assess this person, do they fit into that box or do they need something else?
Mm, yeah.
And the reason their hamstrings were going was because their hamstring was the dominant muscle.
Mm.
And we all know that it makes more sense that the dominant muscle is the one that's going to actually get injured because it's actually doing too much
mm-hmm.
yeah. versus the muscle that's doing absolutely nothing, that's back with a cigar effectively and its yeah. feet up in a chair, that's not going to get hurt. It's yeah. the muscle that does overworking that you're going to have trigger points in and high amounts of sensitivity and a risk of injury. Mm. So yeah, we read those studies. We released a video a while back on knees in, knees out, which unfortunately we took off the beginning part of the clip, which would have explained it more, but we got battered by the powerlifting community. And people were obviously quoting Brett Contreras. But what's actually cool is if you read Brett, people are only quoting Brett Contreras based off articles written on, not by Brett Contreras, articles about his studies on the internet. And it's people taking from those articles what they want to take.
Yeah.
So he's actually gone into EMG, and he actually has summarized EMG at the end of his studies and turned around and gone, well, actually, we don't even know if EMG is important, but all I do know is that the EMG is high in these positions, but what does it mean? And actually, he's done enough to back up that knees in does have high EMG in the bottom of a squat, whereas what he's talking about is mass. But like I say, people are taking those elements from Brett and applying what they want to that particular scenario.
Yeah.
And that's what we're trying to teach coaches, to have that that output. So yeah, I don't particularly blindly follow.
No.
Anybody, apart from Phil, who is Yoda.
Yeah. I think that's
what I say. He's taught me a thought process.
Yeah.
Nothing like it is purely like how to think, and then when you understand how to think, then you can make your decisions.
Mm. Mm.
That's what coaching is.
Yeah.
It's not just saying this is how you do it. It's like, well, let's figure this out so I can help you. I can empower you to make those decisions.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. It's done.
Absolutely. And I totally agree. I think it's interesting there that. There is that mentality towards, I suppose, definitely with, I think, some teams at least, or at least maybe some professional sports, but in the general fitness industry, I definitely think there's a lot of abstract readers, and they'll take the abstract and they won't dig into the actual article or the paper or whatever it is, and they'll go, okay, cool, well, this percentage and this percentage, great, I'll use this as a nice little post of like da-da-da. When you go into the article itself then and you read through the paper and you understand the actual science paper, you're like, hang on a second. This wasn't such and such of a protocol used. This protocol was different. They had only 10 people on this study. They had like, you know what I mean? I think once you actually look at the real data, you're like, hang on, you have to just have a bit more of a common sense approach to it and take it for what it is. It's literally, it's a study, like, or a particular number of studies. But like that, someone like Brett Contreras or someone like the other kind of like even very high level people who are very, very smart scientists. It's very easy sometimes because they're in the fun stuff, in the glute world, in the bodybuilding world, that they can get kind of taken advantage of quite regularly. It's unfortunate, but I think it is a better way for educated coaches to go to have the ability to understand that science and understand that how to read those things and how to really take good stuff from them, not just the simple easy stuff that can be kind of thrown up on a Facebook post or something like that. It can be challenging. What have you got next? Is there any particular coaching step you want to take? Do you want to continue working? Like, obviously, you want to continue working with your high level athletes. Is there a particular sport you would like to get into or work with more athletes from that are interesting or anything like that? Or do you have a particular next kind of step floating around?
Well, for me, my coaching is the same as CrossFit. Mm. Constantly varied.
Yeah.
Like, any sport, like, come to me. Like, I've had golf. And like I had to speak to the golf coach, and it's very much like, okay, what position does he need to be in? Technically, what is wrong? And I'll figure out why that error is happening due to the golfer I work with is I don't know if you know anything about the golf swing. I don't know much, but
not a huge amount, a little bit, yeah.
technically, on his swing for contact, his wrist was coming through before his elbow.
Mm-hmm.
So the golf coach sent him to me because he was like, oh, I think there's a problem with his shoulder, which is why he can't go there.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, what's start position, end position, midpoint position?
Mm-hmm.
And I basically analyzed everything through there, and I found the issue to be with his spine.
Mm.
We taught the spine how it needed to move specific to golf. Mm-hmm. Which is obviously a combination of like the three planes of motion. So the spine needs an ability to laterally flex at the same time as rotating and also being in extension.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like teaching the spine to do that. And yeah, we had some cool results. Like,
nice.
I cost him a whole new set of clubs. and we increased his, what was it now? So the lower the club, the further you can hit it. So yeah, we got him hitting further with his 9 than he used to be able to with his 7.
Jesus.
We increased his output a lot. Mm-hmm. Now again, that's purely just efficiency of movement training that there. So yeah, I'm up for any sport. Like, I love sport.
Mm.
That's I'm I'm a sportsman first over a fitness man.
Yeah.
Like sport, like I understand fitness and just want in to help assist sport.
Yeah.
But I love sport. Nice. So yeah, being able to
work with
just
any,
look and appreciate any sport is I love it.
Nice.
Absolutely.
Nice. Just on a final point, have you any kind of very simple advice to all the coaches kind of listening, but also to any actual athletes that might be like, hang on a second, this sounds kind of interesting. Especially to coaches, though, I suppose. Is there a particular idea that you'd like us to kind of take away? Just that critical thinking point, or else even just the heading towards the principles and really maintaining that focus on those. Anything in particular, James?
Yeah, it's that critical thinking, question everything, and... Yeah, the principles, like I said, listen to these people that are talking about principles and think about it and go, what are they actually telling me at the end of it? Mm. Like, are they telling me that can just fix everything with a certain type of training?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if it's that certain type of training that fixes everything and it's only one style, then it's not the principles. It's their principles of how they like to train people. Mm. And that's people that are trying to, I'm talking about people that are trying to fix movement. I'm not talking about CrossFit coaches, because like I say, CrossFit is a training methodology.
Yeah.
Like, we're integrating the different sports because it's a good way to train.
Exactly.
Like, I'm talking about people that are saying, oh, we fix everything by doing this, or we fix everything by doing this.
Yeah.
Like, I'm talking about those guys. So that's where the principles
are so important. Like,
that's where you need to ask about their principles.
Yeah.
More than anything, what someone's chosen to do as a sport and training system is absolutely fine.
And
being able to differentiate that and understand what's this person talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a good wrap up. James, where can we can find you on Instagram, Facebook, all the cool places for Red Pill Coaching?
Yes,
well, kind of.
as you've probably seen, I'm fairly inactive.
You're a mysterious character, yeah.
So yeah.
Mysterious character.
Well, no, I mean,
maybe not.
I don't know, like, it's.
Oh, anyways.
Yeah, I mean, I think I always wanted to be. That was part of my thing, like.
Mm.
The people that shout the loudest are just like, why have you got so much time to shout?
Yeah.
Like, the reason I'm not on them, because I'm generally busy doing something with somebody. I don't know. I always wanted to be that guy. It's like.
Actually in the trenches, getting people actually better.
Actually in the trenches, but yeah, just be that guy. It's like, oh, do you know about that guy up in nowhere?
Yeah.
Like, he lives in the hills and he floats when he sits down.
Yeah.
Like, that guy. Like, if you go to see that guy, that's kind of my goal.
Nice.
To just be the whispered man.
Nice. That's good.
Which probably doesn't help sell seminars.
No, but I think like, you're working with and I know you haven't mentioned it yet, and I'll probably shout a bit more about it, I think, because it will give people a good bit of context for those who may not know an awful lot about you, but. Especially in the CrossFit world, you'd work with some very high level and very well known names, so I think that can definitely add to your credibility, especially because they would be fairly experienced and looked on as very smart and aware athletes. So it can only help that they're working with someone like yourself who has a good conscientiousness towards those that kind of attitude, but. Red Pill Coaching is your main spot. We can would people
Red Pill Coaching for the education, yeah, for sure.
Nice.
I mean, I'm trying to improve little bits. I mean, I've got enough videos on my of people's befores and afters and how I've helped people. Like, I literally just need to sit down and stick some stuff on Instagram for people, to be honest. Yeah.
But you have an excellent like, there is a lot of good stuff there. Absolutely, a lot of good stuff.
But yeah, that's where you'll see us. Like I said, Red Pill's the avenue for coaching and improving. James Yashi Training is me working with my particular athletes. And if you look at Phil Mansfield as well, that's him.
Yeah.
I say he's multifaceted, worked across loads of sports, but he works with primarily Ironman and cyclists right now. Yeah. He's got two guys who are top 10 in the world Ironman, like sub you're talking like 8 hour Ironman, like sub 8 hour Ironman. They are
pretty fast.
Guy runs a 2.5 hour marathon off the bike in an Ironman. Like,
ouch.
Talk about aerobic capacity.
that's an engine there. Right.
Yeah. So yeah, he works with them. So yeah, you'll see that kind of stuff on Phil's page. You'll see me working mainly with the CrossFit, and then if I get some variation in there, that'll pop on there if it's interesting. But yeah, Red Pill is us as a coaching provider for coaches. Yeah, coaches and athletes that want to learn a little bit more about the body and how it works and how they can apply that to their sport. Again, it's universal. The principle is universal, so we can apply that across multiple sports from the seminar.
Yeah.
When you understand how it works. So
absolutely.
That's where to find us.
Nice. Well, James, I really, really appreciate you coming on. I think a lot of people get some really good stuff from there. I've really enjoyed the chat, so I really, really thanks. Thank you for joining me. Hope you had an enjoyable time.
Oh no, I've enjoyed it a lot, and hopefully, if they don't like the, at least we can help them get to sleep, right?
Absolutely. that's pretty good. I don't know if we need all these calming apps and all this kind of crack. You know, we got it sorted.
Yeah, exactly. Your brain is overloaded and sleep timing is.
Well, let's try and apply all of these lovely principles, goddamn. nice. So thanks so much for the chat, and we'll chat to you again very soon, James. Okay.
Pleasure.